You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast for the Worldview segment, I talk about some ridiculous actions by Walgreens and their changing of the 12 days of Christmas to the 12 days of holiday so as not to offend anyone who might be offended by the name Christ. For our main topic, Monica and I give a homestead update. It's been quite a while since we've done that, so we talk about a lot of the things that we've done here lately, what we have going on, and a few things about what we have coming up. And that will be the podcast for today. On today's Worldview segment, I would like to cover real quick a post that Michael Ferris wrote on Facebook and just talk about it briefly. Michael Ferris, he's the chancellor of Patrick Henry College. He's a chairman at HSLDA, which is Homeschool Legal Defense Association. He's the president of parentalrights.org, and he's a project director at the Convention of States. And he is a lawyer. He teaches. He has argued in front of the Supreme Court on several occasions for liberty, the cause of liberty, for the cause of ability to homeschool, and those kinds of issues. And he wrote this post a couple days ago, and I'm just going to read it for you and then comment. It says this: "The low point of Christmas commercialization this year took place in a Walgreens store." Okay, a Walgreens is like a pharmacy, a convenience store, all kind of wrapped in one. The store was running the national chain's sound loop through the speaker system. "The ad started on the third day of the holiday my true love gave to me." So what he's saying is that the store, Walgreens, had reworked the 12 days of Christmas into the 12 days of holiday. And he goes on to say, "Good grief, we are so afraid of saying Christmas that we are now butchering that awful song." He says, "I would not care at all if the 12 days of Christmas was never sung again. But when the word Christmas is edited out, there is only one meaning. Christ is perceived as too controversial to mention, even in this secondhand manner." And his point is this, is that the 12 days of Christmas, it is not even a religious song. It speaks about Christmas, but it doesn't directly talk about Christ or what he did, about the incarnation, which led to the death, burial, and resurrection, or anything like that. It's a simple Christmas song that even that they had to edit into ridiculousness of saying the 12 days of holiday or on the third day of holiday. This kind of thing is happening more and more, of course, all across Western society. And, it's a shame. It's a shame that people are so afraid. Or maybe that's their ideology. They don't want anything to do with Christ in Christmas. They have no problem with the commercialization and all of that, or the traditions and Santa Claus and the reindeer, but nothing to do with Christ. And then he goes on to kind of talk about how for him, maybe he shouldn't even be shopping at Walgreens. Okay, as a kind of a small gesture, it's like, I'll just take my money elsewhere. And in fact, later on, he posts, "By way of contrast, I was on hold today with Rite Aid Pharmacy, and the music was praising the God of Glory." Okay, and that is not to say that somehow, Rite Aid is this or that or there, but they weren't afraid to just play Christmas type music. So anyway, the one thing that made me think about in all this is, as Christians, we should be thinking about our choices of shopping, where we spend our money, because we shouldn't be supporting businesses that would outright defy the name of Christ, that would basically deny it. And I realize that it's impossible to not support with our dollars every single organization, every single business, and every single government, with basically boycotting. But as these things come to light, maybe we should be making these types of decisions. Again, not saying that it's going to be able to have some type of great impact, but to think about this, if every single Christian decided not, for example, to shop at Walgreens, instead went to Rite Aid, there would be an impact, and especially if every Christian made it known why they would shop at Rite Aid instead of Walgreens. And that's just an example. I'm not saying go to Rite Aid or boycott Walgreens, you know, because it's hard when you think of organizations, even like Home Depot, I know that supports gay marriage and other unbiblical ideas. And honestly, I don't know that I'm making a difference at all, but I will go to Lowe's every time over Home Depot because of that reason. But again, do your research. Take a stand, even with your dollars. On today's podcast, Monica and I are here, and we are going to give a homestead update. This is for Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm. That's the name of our farm, or a.k.a. the Mitzel Homestead. Monica and I were discussing this morning on what does it mean to be a homestead. We had a little bit of a
disagreement.
I was right, she was wrong, but
not true.
That, anyway, we want to discuss what does it mean to be a homesteader? Because it's, you know, if you look at Wikipedia, it's broadly defined as a lifestyle of self-sufficiency. Now, that's right. Wide open.
That is. But, you know, one thing that, for me, I know that we don't provide the majority of our sustenance right now. We are still running to Costco and everything else because we haven't been here long enough to start our gardens and get our fruit off our fruit trees, which are going to take a few more years before they produce. But I personally think that a homesteader would be defined as somebody who is actively moving toward that type of lifestyle. They're learning skills. They're doing things that get them closer and closer to being able to be self-sufficient.
Right. And I wanted to put some type of number to it, metric. How can we define whether or not someone is a homesteader? Anybody can call themselves a homesteader.
It's true. I mean, there's people who've been living on a homestead for a long time and really haven't done anything.
Right. So what I said was, hey, if you're providing 50% of your own, say, caloric needs, that is a homesteader. And I see the limitation of trying to put a number on it.
Yeah, because then it's like, I don't know, I think it would be funny. It's like we finally, like, pull in our garden and we pull some of our fruit from our trees and then it's like, oh, 50%, I'm a homesteader, it's official, party day. I mean, I just think it's
so. I have acquiesced. I see what you're saying, and I actually agree. I think if somebody is, it's also a mindset.
Yeah.
It's a state of mind. I mean, it's not, it's not as easy as putting a number to it.
It's not, because, you know, one of the things that has struck us differently since we've gotten out here is that mindset. Just the other day, here's Ella darning people's wool socks. I mean, when would we ever do that living in a city?
We wouldn't.
Honestly, she wouldn't have been darning the socks.
You might want to explain what darning means.
Fine. You know, sewing up the holes
in a
specific way in order to recreate the smoothness of the sock. I mean, it's taking what used to be a hole and creating fabric using thread. And she's doing that with a lot of different socks instead of us going out and buying a new pack of wool socks. You just don't do that kind of thing. But homesteaders do.
Yes. Okay. So just real quick, I want to touch on the historical definition of homesteading. Okay. And there was the Homestead Act of 1862, which was signed into law by Abraham Lincoln. And really what it addresses is that people who were moving out west, it was giving them land, really, so that they would occupy it and start working it. Okay, so that was originally what the homesteading was. It was basically be given land by government in order to occupy and move and conduct a westward expansion. Okay, so that was the original Homestead Act. Modern homesteading is what we're doing, and it's kind of this back-to-the-land movement. And so obviously we're not being given land by government, as in the Homestead Act, but we're living a life of self-sufficiency.
Right. Okay. Which is what they were basically
moving
doing.
Towards a life of self-sufficiency.
Right, moving toward a life of self-sufficiency, yes. Which is what they were doing too.
Yeah, absolutely, and it was just helping the country expand
west, yeah.
Right.
But it gave them land that they wouldn't otherwise been able to have. And
yes, yeah, so that's the kind of the difference and kind of what we're doing. So we've kind of loosely come to this term, homesteading, and we've said, hey, it's a life of self-sufficiency, and if somebody is moving in that direction, then they can call themselves a homesteader.
Yeah, and I don't mean like moving like, oh, last year we got our, you know, we got a few chickens, so we're getting eggs, and next year we're hoping to, I mean, that's not really movement. It's like you've been there for 2 years and you've gotten chickens. I'm yeah. talking, you know, you're working toward it. You're doing it actively.
Right, and that reminds me, I think we talked about this a little bit later, but in a previous episode, I think it was 37, where I talked about goal setting, where we really went into what one of our major goals, not all of them, but one of our major goals with regards to this. It's really related to that.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in that, episode 37 covers success through goal setting, and I use one of our specific goals to get us towards much closer towards self-sufficiency
right.
to do that.
Right.
Well, so what we came to do today was to give you an update on our homestead. And we're starting out with our rabbit tree.
Yes. Right?
And a rabbit tree is nothing more than having an operation involving rabbits in order to either show them, either have them for meat, or, you know, or whatever reason someone may have, they can have a rabbit tree. So it implies multiple rabbits and some type of setup or operation involving rabbits.
Right. They're breeding.
Right. And for us, it is distinctly for meat.
Meat.
So we're going to be raising meat rabbits. So we're in the process of that now. And this last week, per our timeline, mm-hmm. our planning timeline, we built a rabbit hutch.
We, meaning you and Austin.
Yes.
I didn't do anything.
Well, I say we as in the Mitzel Homestead.
Okay, fine. The Mitzel Homestead. We. I like that.
Yeah. So we did. We built a rabbit hutch, and it, you know, it's not just a small little thing. It has actually four cages, four does and a buck, and it has two grow out cages as well. So it's got six pretty
right.
large compartments
for the litter. For the right. litters, they're called kits.
Kits.
That they
and
have.
That will be in addition to which is yet to come a rabbit tractor where we put the kits at some point out for
finishing.
The last few weeks on grass, so they get a fresh piece of grass every day and movement that way. So that's one thing. We obtained all of the materials, just about all the materials,
mm-hmm.
from either what we had on hand or from neighbors, and a particular neighbor who mills all his own wood, and so we got a lot from him and different scraps from here and there.
Very affordable.
And we put this whole thing together for under $100.
Yeah.
And easily. I think this would probably have cost somewhere between $300 and $400. It's pretty sizable, pretty good setup. So some of those minor things were little bits of hardware here and there from Lowe's or
right. Yeah, like the latches and things like
yeah.
that.
So that's one thing that we've completed.
Yep.
And then
and that's sitting in our workshop downstairs.
Yes. All right. So the next item is goats. And this is actually very interesting because it's a departure from our plan. But we've always talked about, it, whether it's entrepreneurship or homesteading or anything like that, is that being flexible.
Yeah.
Building a plan, but having it be flexible and with the ability to pivot.
Yes. Well, and the importance of always looking out for opportunities. Because a lot of times, if you're not actively aware of opportunities available around you, you won't even know that you're passing by something.
That's right.
And we had this opportunity.
That's right.
And we took it.
And we took it. And it, we from friends of ours, they actually gave us these goats.
Yeah, they gave us the goats. Right. Because they've been sitting there as pets for a couple of years, and
right.
they're really good milk producers, so, or at least one of them is.
Right. So it's we have one Nubian and one Nigerian pygmy. Okay, and so the Nubian is the dairy goat. The pygmy is also a dairy goat, but it's more just a companion goat.
Yeah, because they're herd animals, so they really need...
Yeah, they definitely need at least one other animal, if not multiple.
Yeah.
So that's that came, and we pivoted. That wasn't part of our plan, but we said, okay, this opportunity is there. We're going to do it. And that does that get us closer to our goal, our major goal that we've set for 2016? Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So, oh, one thing that I forgot about the rabbitry and the hutch and all that is that another opportunity came. We were given
right,
a rabbit.
Right, we were given a rabbit.
Right.
Yeah, my sister got a rabbit.
She got given a rabbit. She contacted us and we said, sure.
We'll take it.
And they happened to be coming out anyway for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And so they came and brought the rabbit.
Brought the rabbit. So we're going to try and breed her.
Yeah.
So that's these are a couple of opportunities that came up. They fit into our plan, but they weren't exactly our plan. But because we had a mindset of, hey, we're willing to pivot if something comes down the pike that's a little bit different, but still helps us to reach our goals, we'll do it.
Yeah.
So we did it.
Yep.
Okay. What's next?
Well, along with the kind of rabbit thing, you know, I started sprouting something that Lindy and I started doing a few weeks ago, sprouting lentils and wheat berries and things like that. Wheat berries, I was doing those really for using in bread. But what ended up happening is I let the sprouts go a little too long. And so they were, well, too long. So I looked up to see what could I do with them, and I saw growing wheatgrass. I'm like, okay. So I put them in soil and grew the wheatgrass. And I said, I wonder if I could give these to the rabbit.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that's called what?
You
fodder,
were like,
right?
Oh, you're growing fodder. Exactly. And I'm like, what's fodder? I don't know what you're talking about.
I've already been part of a group on Facebook called, I don't remember exactly what it's called, but it's fodder for rabbits or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And really what it is it's growing fodder for all kinds of livestock. It's good for them. You know, it's a good supplement to their diet and healthy.
Well, I totally came up on that on accident. It was just something that I started doing, and then Sean's like, yeah, you're growing fodder. Because I was like, I wonder if I could give the sprouted lentils to the rabbit. I wonder if I could give this wheatgrass to the rabbit. And he's like, you're growing fodder. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's been, we've been continuing to do that, and the rabbit really, really loves it. Misses the lentils because we ran out of lentils, but she's really enjoyed having that extra green and all the fun, fresh sprouts.
Absolutely. Okay.
And the goats, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next on the list is wood stove installation. Now, this is another departure from the plan a little bit, but it met the requirement is that we wanted to get some more heat in the home, and we wanted to do it efficiently.
Yes.
Because we have an insert on the main floor, but nothing in the workshop in the basement, which would, I think, and does, help heat the entire home.
Yeah, it does.
And so, what I wanted to do was build a rocket mass heater.
Mm-hmm. However,
the opportunity came along to get a really good wood stove for a extremely reasonable price and to include all of the components of the wood stove. So the stove pipe, which is more expensive than the wood stove itself. And if you go out and buy it new, stove pipe is extremely expensive.
Well, especially the kind you have to get in order to run up the side of the house, which is the double-walled.
The double-walled stainless steel construction stove pipe, very expensive stuff.
Yeah, and fortunately, again, neighbor.
Yes, who had a bunch of extra older stuff laying around, but very, very good. So we bought it from him, had a very low price.
Yeah, and the wood stove we got at basically half of what he was actually trying to sell it for, because, again, he was somebody that we knew.
Yes, and I had a couple of people, neighbors, at different periods come help me do the install, because I'd never done one.
Right. One of them specializes in construction, and so he helped
basically get through the wall in the right place.
Make sure there's no like electrical stuff or plumbing.
Obtain all the proper clearances, and then the other guy came to help me basically do the outside.
Yeah, go all the way up.
All the way up, you know, past our roof line to hit all the standard. To make sure we're in code and all those.
Yeah, because I mean, we're talking coming from the basement up through the roof of a house that has vaulted ceilings.
Yeah,
that's a high.
Oh yeah, we're at the top of the ladder. That wasn't exactly fun, but we got that done, and that's been tremendous for helping to heat the home.
And you learned a lot.
Yes, and we did it all. I would say for $500.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
And if you think about that, I mean, it would have cost several thousand for
buy the wood stove, to buy all the
Installation.
The chimney and the installation would have cost
several thousand dollars.
Yeah.
So that was great. And that's, you know, a little bit of do it yourself. Did I know what I was doing?
No.
No, but we figured it out along the way with some help. And to be honest, the two guys that helped me, they weren't experts in installing wood stoves. But we kind of all figured it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had done, one of them had done one himself. The other one had done a few. But again, so it was just some neighbors coming together to figure out a project and help each other out.
Yeah. See, that's homesteadery.
It is. I agree. Okay. The next item is forestry short course. Mm-hmm. One of the things I saw when I first got here was that the University of Idaho, the Extension Campus, kind of does this adult learning. It's not for college credit or anything like that, but does a forestry short course. So this is 6 classes, 3 hours, you know, once a week, you know, over a 2-month period because there was a couple breaks in there. And it was about learning all about forestry, and that's why I've done a few podcasts on the family forest. And this was extremely helpful, and although I probably just scratched the surface, but I do have now an understanding of at least where to ask the right questions. I got into the county and was able to find out about some tax benefits of keeping your, you know, kind of grooming your land for using it for commercial timber. You know, having a plan for that. So it doesn't matter. We come up with our plan as long as it's signed off by a certified forester in a sustainable manner. So, you know, our plan is obviously not to come and clear cut our forest or anything like that. But we want to keep the opportunity available for down the road, 20, 30 years down the road, maybe.
Yeah, and we do have a lot of thick forest. I mean, it's thick.
Yeah.
Some places you know, you have to really work to get through.
Right.
So,
and I would say our goals, in addition to maybe doing commercial lumber down the road, is obviously our own sustainable use of wood, of trees for lumber, trees for firewood, to do non-timber forest products, so some forest gardening, silvopasture, and those kinds of things. So I pulled a lot away from that. It covered everything from identification to pests and disease and, you know, the importance of thinning in certain areas based on your objectives.
Right.
So that it was a very helpful course.
And we can now drink pine needle tea.
Well, yeah. Yes. Pine needle tea and all of its benefits.
Yeah. It's tasty. It's like drinking a Christmas tree.
That's right. All right, so the next item is our UTV. We probably briefly mentioned this.
And we've obviously posted that on Facebook, the pictures from that. But
yeah, well, we knew we needed a utility vehicle of some kind. And, you know, we went back and forth with whether or not to get a tractor or a skid steer or a four-wheeler or a UTV.
So
we had to have some kind of farm vehicle. And basically, what we boiled it down to is, okay, what are our requirements? You know, and obviously also our budget. All these things we took into consideration. We needed something to be able to plow snow. We needed something to be able to haul wood, even pull logs.
Mm-hmm.
So doing a little bit of skid steer stuff, you know, right, on a minor scale.
Right, and the fact that we needed something that could maneuver the type of slope we have.
Yeah.
And we still have some little stumps and things like that.
Yeah, our skid trails are not...
Are not cleared yet.
Smooth and clear. And, right, there's...
So it needed to be...
Rugged.
Rugged and tough.
Four-wheel drive.
Yeah. And we've got some steep area on our driveway, so it needed to be able to handle that kind of stuff easily,
ice.
Too.
Yep. So we ended up with a utility vehicle with a plow on it, which fit into our budget. When we were looking at even used tractors and used skid steers, it was just too much.
Yeah, it was expensive.
Just couldn't justify it. I'd love to get something, a tractor with a plow and a bucket on and... all those types of attachments that would be great. We just couldn't.
Not right now.
Yeah.
Maybe in the future, and that's something that, you know, we can work into our plan, but right now it just wasn't practical. And this is really what we need for everything that we need to do, especially the next couple of years.
Yes, absolutely. So we're pretty happy with that.
Yeah. It's a fun little vehicle.
Yeah, and we've used it for hauling wood. I did a little test plow yesterday, in fact. We haven't needed it for plowing yet because the amount of snow we've gotten has been low enough where it's just not required.
Right.
We've got good vehicles with chains and things, and so we've been making do without having to plow half mile.
Yeah, it's nice.
So the next item, predator proofing the barn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this came with the goat opportunity.
Yeah.
And because they had a cow in there before, and that barn was designed for a cow, not for goats, and that, you know, predators would go after a goat much sooner than they'll go after a cow.
Yeah, and then there was space on, so in our barn, there's a lower level where the animals are, and then there's an upper level where store the hay and straw and things like that. Well, the cow didn't get up there and didn't go under that because it's a big animal, whereas our little pygmy actually could fit under that upper floor, and so we had to block that area off so the pygmy didn't get stuck, and we had to put a gate across where you could pass through, you know, past the manger and jump up onto the second floor, and all the goats, of course, they're going to go to the highest level because they're goats.
Yes.
That's what we like to do.
Probably a better term instead of predator-proofing the barn is, yes, we're predator-proofing the barn for predators getting in, and then also goats proofing the barn so that they stay where they're supposed to stay.
Right.
That took some work.
Right, because they were going to get into the hay and everything else we were storing up there. They were like, woohoo!
So we used portions of cattle panels and other fencing and reinforced it because goats, they will climb up and put their front hooves on the fence, and they're always going to push forward. So you just got to design it that way, and you put all the reinforcement, you know, where they're going to be pushing, and it worked. So no predators are getting in, and the goats are staying where they're supposed to.
Yeah, and Lindy is taking care of the goats, and so in the morning and the evening, in the morning she lets them out of the barn and gives them their hay and their other feed. And then you put up their mineral tray.
Right.
So they have access to minerals and they can get out. But she gives them some of our home, like our kitchen scraps every evening. And they come running to the barn.
Oh, yeah. They're real friendly, too.
Very friendly.
Previous owners did a good job of socializing them.
Yeah.
So
they walk around with you.
Yep. If you go out in the pasture, they'll walk around with you and
follow you around. And
they're booming around. We got snow in our pasture right now, but there are still spots because our pasture is not totally cleared. It has 15 to 20 trees in it.
Yeah, a few really large ones.
Yeah, and that's by design. And so that provides some spots that there's no snow on. So they're still all out there nibbling on that and some of the smaller trees.
Oh, yeah, they love those new little trees that are sprouting up.
Yep.
They just tear those right out.
They seem to really like the ponderosa pine needles. And from my understanding, that helps with keeping them clean of parasites and everything else.
Yeah. So. What's awesome is that it's actually helping us do some of the clearing in the pasture that we need to do anyway.
That's right. So I don't mind them chewing all that. They're not going to get the big trees that we're leaving. It's fine. So they want to chew down the little trees. That's fine by me.
Yeah.
The next item, which was, this was really important, is that we did an order of trees.
Trees.
And
we ordered, what,
39
trees and bushes.
Trees and bushes. All the nurseries out there, and I tell you, it's so important. You got to order really early.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because
it's not too late, but it's like getting down to a lot of stuff's going to be out of stock already.
Yeah. Well, matter of fact, some of the things that we did want were out of stock, so we're going to have to look at local nurseries when the spring comes and try and find some of the other ones that we wanted.
Right. And even then, you know, you're still struggling with finding what you're looking for. And but one of the requirements, we wanted trees that were grown in a place. They're grown organically. They're not injected with a bunch of
stuff
and chemicals and everything else. Because that's not how we're going to run it out here. I don't think it's a showstopper by any means to buy quote-unquote
commercial
trees. That's not a huge deal, but I would rather.
Right, and that's what we did. We bought organically. And that was nice. I actually feel really good about that. And also the fact that it wasn't as expensive as I anticipated it being. I mean, it's still an investment.
Yeah, it's an investment.
It was an investment.
Yeah.
But we weren't... I felt like it was a little bit cheaper online. Maybe because they were smaller trees.
Yeah, and some of them are seedlings, and some of them are going to be a little bit bigger than that.
Yeah.
But it's important. If you're going to order, you got to order early.
You do.
You really do. In fact, I think...
Because some of the more common things...
November is the proper time, not December.
Yeah.
For ordering trees. And some of the stuff that we got, we'll be able to propagate from now on, but we want to go ahead and get those starts.
Yeah.
This is really important because it's tied into our food forest that we've started already on the north side of our property. On our terraces.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is kind of rounding out that as far as the productive trees, we've got some support species as well.
Right.
The black locust, which is a nitrogen fixing tree. So that really helps the other productive trees to stay fertilized. We're not putting in fertilizer stakes, and we're not putting on chemical fertilizers. We're not doing those things.
Right. And the other thing is when we were purchasing the trees to make sure that we were getting proper pollinators and things like that. So buying trees, you have to have a little bit of information.
Yes.
Like you can't just go in and go, oh, I'm going to buy this tree. Because there are, like we learned, well, at least I did this last fall, like, oh, wow, you need a particular kind of pollinator. You need males and females and you need the nitrogen fixers and all those types of things. And that one video by Stefan...
Sapkowski.
Yeah, I can't say his last name.
Sapkowski, sorry.
Sapkowski, okay.
The Permaculture Orchard.
Permaculture Orchard.
We did a podcast on that, and I can't remember the number right now.
I don't remember
the
number.
But I interviewed
him.
Yes,
and you had the interview with him, and we watched his video.
His documentary.
Documentary, and that was really
helpful.
Informative.
Yeah.
I mean, I learned a lot from that. And I actually would recommend not only people watching it if they're going to have any kind of trees growing on their property, but, you know, making that kind of a normal part of your repertoire to watch it again.
Yes.
Because you learn stuff as you're going along.
And he gave some extra insights in the interview as well. So
yeah.
So that was good.
The interview was good.
Particularly about attracting certain kinds of pollinators. So not just having a beehive, which is a great thing and which we are going to do. But attracting natural pollinators, birds and other types of beneficial insects.
Yeah, and I think on the podcast he went a little bit into bats and also his own animals that he's keeping on, which wasn't in the documentary because he had added those just more recently.
Right.
So.
So that's what this order of trees will round out our food forest on the north side, our Zone 2 food forest. And it's also going to lay out one swale that we're going to put in our pasture. So we're going to be doing what's called silvopasture, which is combining pasture and trees in a productive manner. So animals and trees and pasture, all that's going to be working together symbiotically. So this order of trees will help that out as well.
Yeah.
So more to come on that, but we're excited about that. And we should have those delivered around the first week of May.
Yeah.
Okay, around here, the last frost goes
mid
to late May. But we can get all those things and have them ready to go.
Yeah.
So that's good stuff there. The next item is just talking about, again, it was episode 37 where we really talked about goal setting and project planning, where we laid out some of the things we're doing here and how we plan on accomplishing it. And this is really just an update on that planning cycle. And so we did all that initial planning, and we're on track, I would say.
Yeah.
And our what's key to that that we've talked about over and over is our ability to assess and keep ourselves on track. And we do that through our weekly meeting. And I go into some detail on this in that episode 37. But that's really helped.
Yes.
Because it really helps kick us back on track. But it's always just small course corrections.
Yeah. And well, and not only that, I think that sitting down and actually talking about what's coming up and what we're doing helps bring it fresh into our mind. And so we're more prepared for the upcoming week rather than it being, okay, what's going on today when you first wake up in the morning and going, oh,
yeah.
You know, so we know the complete overview of the week. So if something does come that kind of puts us off for the one day that we maybe aren't able to get everything accomplished we wanted to that day, we know there's some open and available time the next day and we can kind of push it, but still by the end of the week accomplish what we wanted to get done.
That's right.
It's yeah. That overview is helpful.
Yes. And it, you know, it if you're trying to concentrate, sometimes it's good to stay in the trees and not focus on the forest, right? Other times it's good to see the forest for the trees.
Right.
Yeah, and so what this taking things on week by week chunks allows you to stay in the trees while maintaining the forest.
Yeah.
You know, while maintaining the big picture. And we do have like quarterly planning set aside to do step back and look at the forest for the trees.
Right.
But it's helpful when you're not looking at that major goal because it seems overwhelming.
Yeah, it can.
Right. So
yeah.
Eat an elephant one bite at a time.
Right.
Yeah.
One bite at a time.
So that kind of leads us into what we have coming up. So we've just talked about an update and especially since the last time, which has been quite a while since we did a homestead update, and then what we have coming up. So now that we have the rabbit hutch complete, which was our goal for this week, in a couple weeks, we're going to be obtaining more rabbits.
Yes,
so,
another
so we can start
doe and
the
a buck.
Actual rabbitry. So we can get a buck and a doe, so that'll give us a buck and two does, and that's where we're going to start. And we can start breeding them.
Yep. And hopefully it'll give us a couple of kits by the end of March or something. I think that's our goal.
Yeah. I think our goal was to have two kits.
That's what I said.
By the end of March?
Huh?
Okay.
That's what I said. A couple kits by the end of March.
Okay. So. So, how about the type of rabbits? What type of rabbit? We talk about the New Zealands.
Yeah,
and
I think we've been looking. Yeah, I think that's primarily what we've been looking at. Although, the people that I found that aren't far from us that raise prize meat rabbits, they're not New Zealand or California, and I can't remember what kind they are. I hadn't even looked them up because we weren't ready to get them yet.
Well, so a little bit more research. Not sure exactly.
Yeah,
but they may be New Zealand's, Californians, or something else.
And they're really not that expensive.
Right.
You know, we're talking $10, maybe $15
right.
per a doe. And
it was great that we were able to get to build that hutch for $100.
Oh, yeah.
So we're really starting our rabbitry with very low
investment. Yeah.
So that's awesome.
And it's going to be a good return.
Yeah.
Especially if we can get more fodder going.
Yes.
And
the key is to reduce the amount of feed. You know, we don't want to feed them a lot of pellets. We will start with pellets.
Right.
And then hopefully get them on fodder, get them on grass,
yeah.
get them on scraps.
Yeah, the grass in the spring is, right. is going to be really good for them.
Yes. You're
going to enjoy that.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what's coming up. So, in fact, it's the first week in January. It's our planned week for obtaining the rabbits.
Yep.
And then we also have garden planning coming up. So
yes.
this is a big deal. And what we're talking about as far as garden planning is our annual garden.
Right. right. With some perennials, but
yeah.
primarily our annual.
Yeah. And, you know, like we've talked about many times, most of what we want to do out here is perennial stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Trees are perennial. A lot of the bushes are perennial. We want to grow a lot of perennial vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Animals are perennial.
Yeah.
We want to do an annual garden. We have a pretty good sized area for an annual garden. But that takes a lot of planning.
Yes. We want to figure out just practically what kind of vegetables do we use on a regular basis. So we're not growing things that we wouldn't be buying anyway, or that we're not really going to utilize as much. We know we use a lot of particular things. And so we want to focus on growing those for our family.
Yes, absolutely.
Planning's important.
Yeah, very much so. All right, our last item. So coming up pretty quick is some more building projects. And what we need to get done here is a chicken coop
mm-hmm.
and chicken tractors. All right, so we're gonna grow a lot of chickens out here, both layers and meat chickens. And so we have particular goals in this area, so this is not a small thing. And so a chicken coop and a couple of chicken tractors. And we had our requirements, and so we're still working on designs and things like that. So we want them to be mobile. Obviously, the tractors are mobile.
Right.
But we're not 100% sure whether we're going to do a fixed chicken coop or not. If we do a fixed chicken coop, it will have the ability to, using gates, for them to do different paddocks.
Right.
But,
with our terrain, we have unique challenges that some people may not have with a totally flat pasture, pastured open space. We don't have that.
Exactly. So, but with that, we also have a requirement where we want chickens to follow our bigger livestock.
Yes.
To sanitize pasture. You know, by they dig and scratch through manures and things and eat the bugs and sanitize the pasture.
Right, creating a much healthier pasture.
Land. Yeah, it keeps parasites down for the goats and mm-hmm. whatever else we have at that time,
right.
sheep, whether sheep and cows or some combination thereof.
Right.
So these are kind of things we're wrestling with, but we know that that's coming up soon. And so we have a few decisions to make on that, and then we'll get her done.
Yeah, start the building project again.
Excellent. All right, anything else?
Nope, I think that's about it.
Awesome. Our scripture for today comes from Luke chapter 2, verses 10 through 13. And it says, "And the angel said to them, 'Fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. And this will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger.' And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, 'Glory to God in the highest.'" This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.